This is the Rich Eisen Show.
We're all in. We're all in.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
TJ, you're the Cowboy fan here?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
The Rich Eisen Show.
As of now, no new contracts for Dak, CeeDee, or Micah. Micah at least has taken the pressure cooker off with him by him saying, I'll wait my turn.
Today's guests, Baseball Hall of Famer George Brett, actor Billy Magnuson. Plus, what's more likely, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
That's correct. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. For those who are watching on the Roku channel, you can obviously see I am not in the Rich Eisen Show studio. I am home. I have COVID. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Rich Eisen Show. I'm sitting.
Hey, Rich.
Good to see you there, Chris Brockman.
Man.
You're in the studio,
hey,
and
good,
so
man.
Is Mike Del Tufo.
You
at least
all right?
You guys
hanging in there.
I'm hanging in there. I'm going to be able to get through a 3-hour program.
Okay.
I'm going to gut it out. I'm hopped up on Dayquil.
Absolutely.
Got a little bit of ibuprofen in me. I've got the Rich Eisen Show mug sitting right here with a coffee that's not too hot, obviously, since I'm not grabbing it from the usual way you can grab the mug. But yeah, I'm doing all right. I was, beginning to feel it a little bit after yesterday's program. At least, you guys are fine. And at least I didn't expose potentially the entire Albert Breer family to COVID. Wait a minute. His wife, children, and mother-in-law were all with him. So at any rate, I hope everybody out there is feeling well, wherever you are here on this late July Friday. TJ Jefferson's not there. I mean, this is what happens
what is going on? It's just me and Mike empty space.
Right. I mean, Del Tufo's there and TJ Jefferson's Cal Ripken like streak of not missing shows.
It's done.
He's back. He went back east after the program yesterday. But at any rate, that's what's going on. That's why I'm sitting at home and I'm zooming in from it's kind of amazing, man. You know how we did the show through COVID. But I don't believe I've ever done the show from home with COVID. This
right.
is kind of a first for
right,
me.
Right.
So at any rate, good to see you guys.
Hey, good to see you guys.
Good to
see you, man. Nice hoodie.
I figured.
Let's go.
I'll brand it.
Why not?
Wearing the Rich Eisen Show hoodie. Got, got that going for me, which is nice. We've got George Brett on today's program and the actor Billy Magnuson, who many people might remember from Boardwalk Empire and other great TV shows and movies, Maniac, and so much more. He's in a new show called Coup. Roadhouse is the thing that you saw him most recently, and he was the bad guy in Roadhouse. Coup is available in theaters nationwide, coming up on the first Friday, 1 week from today. And 1 week from today, also, we'll have an actual preseason game in the books. Ooh. 1 week from today. It will be the Jacket Dinner in Canton, Ohio, and I might be doing the show from this way from Ohio next Friday.
Right.
Getting ready to host the Jacket Dinner next week in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and as you know, that's when football, quote-unquote, is officially back. I'm very excited about all of that. Let's start today's program, because George, as I mentioned, George Brett's on the program. We'll explain specifically why we reached out to George to join us this week. In a moment, but we went off the air yesterday and with the latest from Jerry Jones. He held his annual open of Cowboys training camp in Oxnard, California, about an hour up the road from the studio there, or from COVID headquarters here where I live. And so we got his opening comments, but Dak Prescott took the podium after we went off the air. And he said something that I want to play for everyone here because it's as honest a soundbite as you can see. It's seemingly raw for him to say such a thing, which is the reality that this could be his last year as a Dallas Cowboy. Now, Jerry Jones, in his comments yesterday that we did play for you on the program, was that he does not think it would be Dak Prescott's last year as a Dallas Cowboy, but this is his walk year. And as we all know, the all-in strategy of Jerry Jones wasn't to go all-in with the roster with other people coming in and mixing and matching from his very talented roster that he and his son and the rest of the front office has built for Mike McCarthy to coach and supplement those folks with some free agents here or there. And, you know, the name Derrick Henry has been the one that I keep saying over and over again. Like, could you imagine the difference in excitement, tenor, and also the difference in the possibility of the Cowboys getting finally to the NFC Championship game, if not beyond, if the Derrick Henry that we've seen for the years that he is building a Hall of Fame resume, in my estimation, since coming off the campus of Alabama, if he could bring that game to Dallas, what that would mean in terms of taking pressure off of Dak and taking pressure off of CeeDee Lamb, who's not there because he's unsigned as well at this point in time with a new contract. So he's holding out. Dak is all in there at camp, as only he knows one speed. And so he was asked if he thought this was going to be his last year in Dallas because he has a no-trade clause. They can't trade him. He also can't be franchise tagged. He will be a full-on free agent once this season is all completely over. So cue Dak Prescott on whether he's looking towards a non-Cowboy future.
But at the end of the day, it's a business, and you know, when I'm gonna say it, I want to be here, but you know, when you look up all the great quarterbacks I watched played for other teams. So my point in saying that is that that's not something to fear. That may be a reality for me one day, may not be my decision. So that's the freedom that I have is be where your feet are, make the most of it, be confident in yourself, make your team better. I love my teammates. I love that locker room. I love everything about being out here in Oxnard and being a Dallas Cowboy. So that's what allows me to be free and focus and understand that in time comes, who knows what comes. As I said, I've been through a lot of adversity personally, that it's about, you know, being thankful for where you are, hugging and loving on your loved ones and taking it one day at a time and handling the rest when it approaches.
How about that one, Christopher, huh?
You know, it's Tom Brady played for the Bucks, and Aaron Rodgers is playing for the Jets, and Peyton Manning is played for the Broncos, and Joe Namath, you know, played out west. It's kind of a weird reality of the National Football League. It's not the way it goes anymore. Your heroes, your favorite players eventually play for a different team. Whether it's midway through the career, like Dak is right now, or at the end of the career, like the guys I mentioned. And I kind of would expect to see Dak in another uniform at some point. It's almost inevitable with the way today's NFL is.
Well, I mean, Stafford also, right?
Yeah, exactly. Matt Stafford.
With the Rams. I mean, we could go on and on and on, and how rare it is.
Brett Favre, Favre,
right?
Yeah, it happens.
You know, the number of Hall of Fame quarterbacks that you see go into the Hall of Fame with multiple teams on their bust platform, right? But the part of the soundbite that leapt out to me is him saying, I'm just going to say it. And how he knows what he's saying sounds like a leverage play, which is not his default, right? His default is to be the Dallas Cowboy leader and that he's all in. So for him to say, hey, you know, I'm kind of Googling, you know, great quarterbacks and their resumes and seeing how they didn't just stay with one team forever. And I'm literally spending my time looking at that sort of thing and then spending my time also thinking about the great things in life that I also would still have, even if I changed my professional address and uniform and helmet logo. And when he said that at the end, right? You know who that reminded me of, Chris? Hmm. It reminded me of myself during the dark Michigan, Ohio State years, watching Ohio State beat the crap out of Michigan.
Every year. Yeah.
And I would just say, you know what? My kids are still here. You know,
you're trying to think of the positive.
They
things.
Love me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was just realizing the inevitable of the reality of the awfulness of the situation, right?
Right.
And trying to find any sort of silver lining I could find directly in front of me or search for in my life that could take my mind off of this, right? Like, that's what that reminded me of.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, like, does he feel it's inevitable? Or, you know.
It almost sounded like it. He almost sounded like it. Like, look.
Like resigned,
this,
right?
Yeah,
like,
resigned to the fact that, hey, this is going to be it. I'm going to give you everything I have this year like I always have because that's the only way I know how to play. I'm one of the best Cowboy quarterbacks, really, of all time, statistically, when you look at it. I've won a ton of games. I haven't taken us to the big one, but I'm going to give you everything I have, and my promise to you is that I'm trying to take us there, but this might be it. This might be our last ride together.
He's all in.
He's all in.
I know that. Or he's got to realize, you know, with whom he is dealing, which is, you know, a Hall of Fame wheeler and dealer.
Yeah.
Who, you know, sits back and waits until midnight strikes to make a deal, right?
Not even. I mean, 12:05.
And also, you know, the reality of the situation, Stephen Jones stepped up, you know, this was before Dak spoke. And Stephen Jones spoke about the realities of the cap and the fact that there is CeeDee Lamb who wants to be paid the highest, the most as a wide receiver, one would think, which means he would be the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. And this is what Stephen Jones had to say about the realities of what's going on with Dak.
I welcome the opportunity that we've drafted well enough to have one of the best quarterbacks in the league, one of the best pass rushers in the league, if not the best, and one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver in the league. Welcome the opportunity. It's great that we draft like that, but it does take time, and it's certainly not easy. You know, you look at a guy like Jefferson, they're not paying a quarterback. They're not paying anybody on their roster at this point. So it's a lot easier for them to stretch a little more, and we're just trying to work through reasonably with CD, reasonably with Dak, what we can do to make it work from an economic standpoint. And certainly when you're trying to pay three guys like that, it certainly does limit your opportunities to maybe improve the roster down the line.
Yeah, and, you know, Stephen Jones was saying what Jerry was saying. The number of times that they said in their press conference over and over again, the current roster's amount of collective Pro Bowl appearances and the current roster's amount of collective All-Pro team appearances, and how, you know, if they're all in with a roster, this isn't a shabby roster to be all in with. The problem is, you know, down the road, obviously, and how do you get those guys in now? Well, Dak's not going anywhere. CeeDee Lamb is still sitting in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is for them that they waited. Justin Jefferson set the market. CeeDee Lamb now wants what Justin Jefferson wants. And what Justin Jefferson has is also something that Micah Parsons wants, which is to be the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. And Mike is like, I'll just sit back and let my wide receiver set the market. And then the quarterback is looking at other quarterbacks set the market higher and higher and higher. And the ones who are setting the market higher, higher, and higher don't have Super Bowl rings. Jared Goff doesn't have a Super Bowl ring. Trevor Lawrence doesn't have a Super Bowl ring. Jordan Love doesn't have a Super Bowl ring. Tua Tagovailoa doesn't have a Super Bowl ring.
Herbert, Burrow, the guys who just signed before them.
Correct. And so that's the issue for Dallas, because that's the way they do their business. But in the same way that what Dak said sounds like a leverage play, so does, you know, what Stephen Jones is saying, which is, you know, hey, the reason why Justin Jefferson can get paid all that money is because they're not paying their quarterback.
Yeah.
So is that a message to Dak? I don't think so. I don't think that's a shot across the Dak bow. But right now, what the Cowboys need to be doing is coalescing around, you know, their campaign, sort of, not to go outside of the lanes of our sports world, but coalescing around a campaign here. And right now, you know, the convention is about a month away and their top wide receivers working out in Houston and their quarterbacks talking about, you know, loving, you know, his family and being thankful for everything in his life because he doesn't know if his professional lives can be turned upside down. And Micah Parsons is just chilling out saying, you know, I'll go sack quarterbacks and until you tell me it's time to, you know, negotiate. At least they have that going for them, as opposed to Micah saying, I want my money right now.
which he easily could do.
And totally blow this whole thing way up. Completely. Because, you know, there's a lot of clocks ticking, like Mona Lisa Vito here. and at least for them, one of them is willing to wait to 2025. But CD's got to be done now. And one would think the way to help get CD done is to get Dak done. Let him go into that game against Cleveland fully signed, sealed, and delivered. Two guys at least who are not having to be in this all-in boat. But unless Jerry wants maybe everyone in the same boat, it's going to be fascinating to watch, obviously.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. A CD probably gets done, and that's it, right?
Yep. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Dak gets done. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. Mm. You never know with Jerry Jones,
I know.
You just never know. On this program, Billy Magnuson, we recorded our conversation with him earlier this week. So when I appear in studio with him later on, you'll see that. And then George Brett, we chatted with him yesterday. We're going to play this today anyway, because it's the anniversary week of the Pine Tar game. 41 years ago, this past Wednesday, when I was having an endoscopy, having a hell of a health week. And I think George wanted to give the umpires that day a colonoscopy. And so though that moment 41 years ago, wait till you hear this conversation with the great George Brett, talking also about the Kansas City Royals of the present day and Bo Jackson and more. One of the all-time greats in any sport, anywhere. George Brett, when we come back on The Rich Eisen Show.
It's kickoff time, and Believe Podcasts are here to get you ready for the season.
He wanted to change the culture, and he wanted me to be a part of that.
With Believe, you get immediate reactions, game previews, and expert analysis from all 32 teams, plus all of your favorite college teams.
He's just rare in just about everything he does.
Sideline to sideline, end zone to end zone.
This was good for everybody.
Just search Believe. That's B-L-E-A-V podcast, wherever you listen.
All right, back here on the Roku channel. Radio audience will rejoin shortly. As you can see, I'm in my home office. Chris, you didn't know where I was going. I said where Dak's soliloquy reminded him of me.
I thought I was just
making it about myself, which I did.
Of course.
But while we're on the subject of making it about myself, Mike, this one's for you, okay?
Uh-oh.
All right. So you see behind me right here, that's my NFL 100 tile. They had tiles for any NFL 100 players. They had this, Lucite tile and would take it with their face on it and put it in the wall.
That's
pretty
cool.
So they made me one that says Rich Eisen on it. So that's right there. But right next to it, hold on a minute.
I know, I saw it. You can
hold on a second.
Hold on.
I don't have 25 of these.
That was well deserved, Rich, because I love that
Emmy
show.
Emmy Flex.
I love that show.
Look at that lady of the television lake right there, huh?
That is,
look at that.
What does it say on it? Like, what does the official engraving say for you there?
Well, it's interesting you ask, Chris. Oh, my God. Hold on a second. My eyes see.
My eyes see.
It is an outstanding studio show, limited run, NFL 100 all time team, NFL Network right here.
Oh, nice. So.
That was a great, I love that. Rich,
that show was one of a kind, man.
Into the television world.
That's right.
That show was one of a kind.
No question about it. When you see Bill this year everywhere, that was five years ago, 2019.
Wow. 2019.
Yeah,
crazy.
Brother.
Crazy.
Yeah. That was the summer before Belichick and Brady's last year together.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Wow.
So
5 years ago. And that's where he was, everyone's like,
That only seems like 2 years ago for me.
It does. It actually does.
I know. 5 years ago. This is year 105 for the NFL.
Wow. Whoa.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show radio network, I am at home with COVID, but still, I'm sitting at a Rich Eisen Show desk that's furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Earlier in the week, I noticed, July 24th, Wednesday, 2024, was the 41st anniversary of the famous Pine Tar game in New York City in Yankee Stadium between the Royals and the Yankees, where George Brett had a go-ahead home run in the top of the ninth off of Goose Gossage. And then the umpires were handed his bat by Billy Martin of the Yankees to say, hey, the pine tar is too high on the bat, and they disallowed the home run, and George Brett went nuts. So I asked the booking staff, can we get him Wednesday? And they're like, you're out Wednesday. Again, that's where I was having a slight small procedure. Everything's fine. Long story short, though, we did chat with George yesterday morning, and here are the contents of my conversation with the Hall of Famer.
He is one of the best baseball players in the history of the game and revered in Kansas City, and why not? He's baseball Hall of Famer George Brett here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, George?
Rich, I'm doing great. How are you?
I am better for seeing you. I appreciate you taking the time because I'm sure you get a lot of calls this time of year.
Well, it's a lot more fun now. You know, last year the Royals won 56 games all year. They've already won 56, so it's been a lot more fun around Kansas City.
I bet so. The reason why I bring up this time of year is the anniversary that just passed.
Wednesday. That's right. Yeah.
Yes, sir. It was 41 years ago Wednesday, George, when you strode into Yankee Stadium on that day and brought your bat with you. George.
Yeah, I brought my bat and it had a little too much bite jar on it, I didn't know at the time.
So let's just drill down on this, if you don't mind, a little bit. What were you thinking as you strolled into Yankee Stadium's batter's box against Goose Gossage with a man on, down a run, and two outs in the ninth inning on that day in 1983, George?
Well, I knew Goose. I faced Goose enough over my career that he was going to throw it as hard as he could, and that's all I knew. I didn't know if it was going to be inside, outside. He claims to this day that on that pitch he was trying to hit me in the neck, and the ball was up and in, but I was just trying to hit the ball hard somewhere. And, you know, if I hit that ball in Kansas City, it might hit the bottom of the wall. The right fielder might have caught it, but Yankee Stadium, the fences are so short in right field. I tomahawked it, and it barely went out, and man, I ran around those bases feeling pretty good. Sat in the dugout, felt pretty good. The longer the umpires talked out there on the field, the longer they were talking, and Billy Martin was standing there, and they had a bunch of guys on the team standing around. But the longer they talked, I thought I was in trouble. When they measured the bat like I can see right now across home plate, I'm going, what are they doing there? But the umpires probably know how wide home plate is, and from what I found out after that event, you cannot have pine tar more than 18 inches from the bottom of your bat up to the top of your bat. That bat was 23, so I missed it by 5, and the umpire called me out and I went berserk.
Yes, you did. Did you realize at the time you were going as berserk as you were going, George, in the moment?
I swear, Rich, I don't remember sprinting out there, throwing my arms up. I do remember pointing my finger at Timmy McClellan, and then Joe Brinkman grabbed me from behind and started dragging me. And that's what really kind of pissed me off, because I didn't know who it was, and it was kind of hurting a little bit. And he just kept dragging and dragging and dragging, and I was just trying to get away. I wasn't going to hit Tim McClellan. He's 6'5", had a bat in his hand, shin guards, you know, had a mask in his other hand. If I would have hit him, I would have been kicked out of baseball forever. But I was going to give him a good piece of my mind. And when Joe Brinkman grabbed me from behind, that's what made everything escalate. And, you know, it's funny. I knew I was doing the show today, and yesterday I got a bunch of calls and texts. Hey, congratulations on the anniversary. And I'm going, what are you talking about?
You didn't even know that Wednesday was the anniversary.
Huh. I didn't even know until I started getting texts.
You know, it's kind of amazing how it still stands today. And, you know, Billy Martin being involved in the Yankee dugout, and apparently they, you know, Greg Nettles, who was once popped for that sort of thing when he was on the Minnesota Twins a couple years before the Yankee third baseman noticed your bat, and they were just going to utilize it against you at the most appropriate time to try and, you know, catch you, not knowing it would be a top of the ninth go-ahead two-run shot off of a fellow future Hall of Famer and Goose Gossage. Did you know that the Yankees were kind of staring at your bat, George?
No, I had no clue, and we had played the Yankees like 10 days before, in Kansas City. And, you know, I'm sure I got some hits, but never, you know, you might have hit a two-out double, two outs, or, you know, you might have got a single with nobody on. They weren't going to do it then. They were going to wait for the right moment. And that was about as right as a moment as you could possibly have, a game-winning home run in the top of the ninth inning. And they said, okay, now let's do it. And, you know, I played golf this weekend with John Schuerholz, a fellow Hall of Famer. And John was the general manager of the Royals then, and he and Dean Taylor wrote a letter to then President Lee McPhail.
Yes.
And protested the umpire's decision. Little did I know about any of that stuff. And then about a week later, Lee McPhail came out and said, no, the home run counts. George gets credit with the home run, the RBIs, the Royals are winning. About 10 days later, 2 weeks later, we had an off day on our way to Baltimore. The Yankees had an off day at home. So we had to fly to New York and finish the game from that point on.
Yes. And
I was kicked out of the game, so I didn't have to go. I went to some little Italian restaurant right by the airport in LaGuardia. Watched the game on a little TV and then met everybody back on the airplane.
Yeah, because that was one of the questions about your whereabouts for that game.
Well, I was kicked out of the game, and my manager in 83.
Dick Houser.
Dick Houser.
Yeah.
Dick said, you're not going to the game. You're not even going to set foot near the stadium. So you can sit on the plane. You can go to the terminal and have something to eat. Larry Amici, Don Amici's son, was our travel guy with TWA. We jumped in a cab and went to some little Italian restaurant right by the airport, sat there at the bar, had a little snack, a couple beers, and then the game was over in 10 minutes. And by the time they got back, we were on the plane waiting to go to Baltimore.
Yeah, nobody was in the stadium. Ron Guidry was in center field. Mattingly was at second base. Billy Martin was pissed. Quisenberry closed things out. You know, it was a W for the Royals. And, it's interesting you mentioned how George Brett here on the Rich Eisen Show, how you got suspended for your reaction.
I never got suspended. I just got kicked out of the game.
You got kicked out. Okay.
Never got fined. If I got fined, the Royals paid it.
Okay. So you got.
I got kicked out of games before, and I never paid a fine. Back then the fine might have been $500 or $1,000. I think if I ever got fined, the Kansas City Royals paid it because I never knew about it.
Well, you were ejected from the game. Better way to put it, obviously, right. More accurate. Also, I think we saw a photograph early on in this conversation. Rocky Colavito, your coach.
Yeah,
he
was a hitting coach then.
He got ejected as well for arguing with the umpires. I believe that might be Rocky right there, potentially.
No, that's Dick Houser.
No, that's Dick right there. Okay, so
that's Dick right there, yeah.
So Colavito got ejected as well, and also got ejected was fellow future Hall of Famer Gaylord Perry, because I think he ran off with the bat. George, is that what happened?
But he did. Gaylord was the first guy that I played with that was a memorabilia nut, and supposedly when he won his 300th game, he wore 9 different jerseys, and then he sold every jersey as a game used 300 win jersey. You know. So Gaylord all of a sudden saw dollar bill signs in his eyes as the umpire is holding the bat and we're out there arguing. Gaylord rips the bat out of the umpire's hand and he starts running with it. And then all of a sudden he throws it to Steve Ranko because the security was getting around him. And then Steve threw it to somebody else. They took off running to the locker room. And from what I was told, I was still on the field arguing. The security people in New York are on the radio. Lock the locker room door. The bat is coming that way. We got to get that bat, But Gaylord tried to steal it, which made me look even more guilty. Thanks, Gaylord. But I hope you're getting a good laugh out of this in heaven, Gaylord.
But is it true?
Guilty trying to steal the evidence.
Is it true, though, you eventually got possession of the bat back and gave it to the Hall of Fame? Is that true, George?
Well, what happened is Lee McPhail ended up mailing me the bat back, and they mailed it back through Emory Air Freight in Detroit. And I got the bat, and the first thing I did is I cleaned it up a little bit, and I put a little red line where 18 inches was. And I'm using that bat, and Gaylord Perry says, George, are you crazy? That bat's worth a lot of money. So I took the bat out of play. Anyways, down the road, Barry Halper, Barry, the big collector out of New York,
yep.
He wanted the bat. I was getting calls from so many people wanting to buy the bat from me. I ended up selling it to Barry Halper. And then about 2 weeks later, I came to my senses and I said, that bat belongs in the Hall of Fame. So I gave Barry back his money. He gave me the bat and I gave it to the Hall of Fame.
Where it currently is.
That's where it belongs. That's where it belongs.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, Barry has the ball, though, that you hit. And Goose Gossage autographed it in the most profane manner, George. That's
yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, Goose, by the way, set a record of cursing on live Rich Eisen show air about 5 years ago. But I'm sure that doesn't surprise you.
What was he ranting about?
I kind of don't remember because I was just blacking out for how many times he dropped F-bombs. But apparently he put one on the ball saying, Barry, I threw the effing thing is what he wrote. That's how it apparently is what he autographed the ball. But it's amazing how it endures 41 years later, George. You know?
Well, you know, it's funny. That's what I'm remembered for. And prior to that, I have to remind everybody that I was the guy with hemorrhoids in the 80 World Series. And everywhere I went from 1980 to July 24th, 1983, I would get on the on-deck circle on the road, and all I would hear is hemorrhoid jokes. Well, the pine tar incident is the greatest thing that ever happened to me because now, from July 24th, 1983, even till today, I'm the pine tar guy. Now, what would you rather be remembered for between those two things? Hitting a home run off Goose to win a game in New York or the guy that suffered from hemorrhoids in the 80 World Series? Come on, what would you rather be remembered for, Rich?
I'd rather be the pine tar guy, George Brett.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So it's probably the best thing that ever happened.
The great George Brett here on the Rich Eisen Show. I see you're rocking the KC Hart shirt. You must be really fired up about what you're seeing out of the current Kansas City Royals, George.
Yeah, it's crazy. Last year they won 56 games all year, and this year they've already won 56. They went out and got some veteran pitchers, which has really helped, and Lugo and Waka. Cole Reagan's coming into his own. Brady Singer's pitching well. Young guy Alec Marsh is pitching pretty good, but we might have one of the best young players in baseball in Bobby Witt, and he's been on fire lately, and just a great guy, a great competitor. The Royals signed him to a really long contract, and hopefully he'll be able to finish his career in Kansas City. He's something really special. You know, we had young guys come up before, and Moustakas and Hosmer, and boy, you think these guys are going to be Royals forever? Well, it doesn't happen. This guy is the best young Royal player I've ever seen in my life.
No kidding.
Yeah, he is unbelievable. What he can play shortstop, he runs the bases extremely well. He plays hard. He runs, stretches singles into doubles into triples. He's unbelievable shortstop. Hits for power, hits for average. Got a great arm and covers a lot of ground. I mean, he's a 5-tool guy. He's fun to watch. And like last year, Rich, I'll be honest, I bet I went to 25 home games. I bet I've already been to 40.
No.
And we have 2 months to go.
No kidding.
And I will not. He's like Bo Jackson. I will never go to the bathroom, never turn my back, never get in a conversation when he's sitting. I watch. And he had just last week, he had 4 games in a row with 3 hits in a row. And then he got a double his first at bat yesterday, drove in a run. And then yesterday he got 3 more. So right now in the second half, he's probably 13 for 16 or 17 in the second half and playing the best shortstop I've ever seen.
So you just mentioned George Brett here on the Rich Eisen. You just mentioned Bo Jackson's name. What's the most amazing thing you personally witnessed Bo do? George.
Oh, God. The throw in Seattle, maybe, throwing out Harold Reynolds at home plate. Some of the home runs. I was in his batting practice group before games and just being in awe of how far he could hit the ball. But the one thing that I couldn't get anybody to try, and we had a game in Baltimore, and he was playing center field. And he was running full speed to left center, caught a ball backhanded kind of, and was 5 feet from the fence. Didn't want to run into the fence, didn't want to slide. So he just kind of jumped up and ran along the fence and jumped off and landed on his feet. And took about 3 steps on the fence. And the next day in batting practice, I'm out there and I was going to try it. And then I said, I would go up there, I'd put one foot on there, and I'd fold down, break my arm, and never play again. So I said, if anybody will do this, I'll give them $100. We couldn't get anybody to do it. Nobody.
Well, you know, I read the recent biography on him by Jeff Pearlman, and just was one page after another just stunned by the stories that people tell. And this is before, you know, George, there were phones, and before there was anything that could actually record this stuff, and how the stories are kind of like fish stories. They get bigger and bigger and bigger, but they're all true when it comes to Bohm.
Yeah, it's amazing. I used to go to all the home games in L.A. when he played for the Raiders, and I would be on the sidelines. He made sure I was on the sidelines, and I was at the game when his hip came out of socket and went back in against the Bengals. And it was the far sideline, and he came back, and I walked over to him, and he was sitting on the bench, and he was in some pretty good pain. I said, "You all right?" He said, I'm not good. My hip came out of socket and went back in. And so I was talking to their team doctor, because they trained in El Segundo, where I grew up and went to junior high. They bought my junior high school. And my family had a restaurant down in Manhattan Beach at the time, and they all hung out there. So I knew a lot of the Raiders and front office, Al Davis, Al Locasell. I knew all those guys. And so I go up to the team doctor, and I said, "Yeah, Bo said his hip came out of socket, went back in." And the doctor said, "That's impossible." Guess what? With Bo Jackson, nothing was impossible.
So
he was amazing.
You were there that day, huh, George?
I was at the game. I went to almost every home game.
Huh.
And I was still a Chiefs fan, but I was a Bo Jackson.
Listen.
How can you not be a Chiefs fan living in Kansas City right now?
What's your thought? Do you know Mahomes? You met him?
I know him. I was at practice yesterday. I went to the Chiefs practice and was with them. I saw Andy Reid and Brett Veach, the general manager. Had a nice little conversation with Patrick. Travis and I and Patrick have played golf a few times together. I helped Patrick get in my country club here in Kansas City, and so we had a nice little visit between plays, and took my kids to the Super Bowl in Phoenix, and we went to the post party with the Chiefs. It was if you live in Kansas City, this is a really exciting time to live here.
My gosh, George, I mean
and their backup quarterback this year is Wentz.
Yeah, that's right,
Carson Wentz. I mean, I was at practice. You should have seen this guy throw the ball. It was unbelievable.
Well, I mean, you brought the first.
And he's going to play three plays all year, probably.
I know, right? Well, I mean, knock on wood for Mahomes and the Chiefs. I mean, you know, you brought the first championship to Kansas City. You could say easily, and
the Chiefs won the Super Bowl back in the early.
For baseball, I guess, right in the 80s. So and the Chiefs won obviously in Super Bowl IV. So to see them now have a shot at a three-peat. And maybe create football history, George, in Kansas City. That is huge.
It's incredible. It really is. I mean, I don't know how many people go to the Minnesota Vikings, you know, camps. I don't know how many people go to the Tampa Bay camps, but there was probably 6,000, 7,000 people there yesterday watching the Chiefs practice for 2 hours on the field. And St. Joe was a good hour and 10 minutes from Kansas City. Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing.
I love it. Before I let you go, George Brett, my youngest son, left-handed hitter, when I wanted to sort of teach him about, you know, stand back and make sure that you use all of your lower half and to swing, I would show a photograph of you to him, George. Mm-hmm. And just keeping hands back and just this is perfect, quintessential. And I'm wondering, who do you think has the best left-handed stance in Major League Baseball?
Oh, my God, today? That's a tough one. I only follow the Royals, to be honest with you, Rich.
So then what about Ohtani? Let me throw Ohtani's name at you, George.
Ohtani? Yeah. Well, obviously, he's making $70 million a year. He's doing something right. No, that guy can hit. I mean, it's not a Charlie Lau type swing, which I had, which was top hand off, the weight shift, rhythm, and all that stuff, head down to contact and swinging through the ball. Ohtani's more of a, you know, get your hands out and then just whip it around. But, man, I tell you what, he can hit. See, if that was me, my top hand would be off my bat already. and I would probably be leaning forward with my upper body where I wouldn't be leaning back. But I'm not as big as strong as him. You know, it's amazing. I in order for me to hit the ball, I had to swing through the ball and I had to have a weight shift, and I generated all my power with my legs, not my arms.
Would you counsel him to not pitch anymore, George?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, go ahead and pitch. We signed a guy this year, first pick, Jack somebody out of Florida, big left-hander. I think he had 38 home runs last year, and he's a pitcher, and I hope they let him do both. If he fails as a hitter, at least he can pitch. If he fails as a pitcher, he better hit. Give him $7.5 million. He better be able to do something.
That's right, yeah. George, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
Okay, Rich. Hey, yep. Enjoyed that.
Hey, you know, our studio is right around the corner from George Brett Field. We're in El Segundo. So if you ever come home.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Rich Eisen Show studio right here in El Segundo, California.
Well, where do you live out there? El Segundo or Manhattan?
Oh, no. I'm a little more north, but we're on the campus of what used to be DirecTV, now AT&T. We're right by the airport. We're right by the Lakers, now the Chargers facility, and George Brett Field. So we're here.
El Segundo's a cool little town, isn't it?
It is that. And we love being here. We're the show turns 10 in October, and we've been here for a decade. So if you ever come home, let me know, man.
Well, I'm gonna be out there the end of August. I'll be in Santa Monica. My wife and I are doing a little vacation out there. And growing up in El Segundo, I still have friends. I get out there once a year. We usually play golf at Bel Air, Big Canyon, and Virginia Country Club. So if I'm out there, I'll get a hold of you.
Please. We had the Little League champs in here a few months ago.
Oh, God. How was that?
Awesome.
Danny Boley is a good friend of mine who was the manager, and I would send videos to the kids every day. I watched every game of that, and I was so excited for El Segundo to win a Little League World Series.
It was awesome. We had them in here, all the kids, and so we're all about El Segundo here on the program. Thanks for the Zoom, George. You be well.
Okay, you got it, pal.
You got good it. You. That is George Brett, the great George Brett, Baseball Hall of Famer, right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
How fun was that, Chris? Right?
Just amazing. Woo. Amazing. I used to walk the dog up by George Brett Field all the time when I lived in El Segundo for a few years. And it's amazing. It's amazing that he's from here and the career that he's had and how he's still he's talking about he's been to 40 Royals games. Imagine you're taking the family to a Royals game and
you sit next to George Brett.
You're sitting next to George Brett, or you see him getting a hot dog or something. it's one of the coolest guys ever.
Or you're in Chiefs training camp. You stole him, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. You're going to see Patrick Mahomes, and then that kind of looks like George Brett.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
That's right. Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Wait a minute.
That's right.
Yeah, I know that guy.
You know, if we had only spoken to George today, we'd talk to him about Kermit the Frog Gate.
Oh, God.
Involving the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, gosh. This story.
That's happening.
This story
That's
is unbelievable.
Coming up on the Rich Eisen Show. I've got COVID, everybody, but I'm still here at my post. Don't go anywhere. Join us.
What was it like shooting that scene, though, with Ray Kinsella and his father?
What I did was I went back to when I first read it. And so I become the audience when I read it. And when I read it, I went, I couldn't believe that it had orchestrated itself to that thing. And I had that feeling on the couch. And so I knew if I played that straight, if I didn't wink at anybody, mm-hmm. that these players did come, you know, that's my corn. You know, they kept coming after me. I wasn't going to be able to do that movie. I was going to do Revenge. And I got into Revenge kept getting pushed. And finally, I had to put my foot down and say, look, if you don't get this movie together, I'm going to go do this movie in the corn. I asked the director, why did you hold out for me so long? Why? And he said, well, and this is one of the greatest actors we've ever seen. He goes, they wanted me to do it, Robin Williams. And I said, Robin Williams is perfect. He said, yeah, but when I think of Robin, I think he does hear voices in the corn. And I don't want that. People don't believe you hear voices. That's a director that makes a save. That's a Mariano Rivera, you know?
Sure.
It's a save. He saved his movie because of his belief in an idea you know, not the quality of actor, because Robin Williams will never.
Of course.
This is a guy so special. But I was curious. I said, he's actually a bigger star than me. You know, whatever. And he goes, I need somebody that you don't think hears voices.
And that would be you. I've never heard Robin Williams was considered for that role. That's unbelievable. And then you did it, and obviously we're talking about it today.
Yeah. It had gold dust on it when I read it, because I did that little intake of breath. Do you want to have a catch? And of course, I wept myself.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show here on this last Friday of July, 2024. Oh, where is the time going?
I don't know, man.
TJ Jefferson is back east today. I am sitting at home. I got the Rona, man. Some fighting through it for all of us here, because you know there may be an eye on Rich and Eisen. I'm a team player. There is an eye on COVID. I don't know what I'm saying now. I'm gonna need your help, guys, for the next 2 hours. But at any rate, I love how we still have fans who are like, Rich isn't there, but damn it, I want to play the win-loss game.
Don't care. Let's do it. Win-loss
game. All right. We got Jake in Ohio on the phone line
Jake
right now.
Jake in Ohio.
What's up, Jake?
Yes, sir. How's it going?
How are you?
What do you got, brother?
Good. Rich, hope you're feeling better, man.
I'm all right.
Fun.
I'm good.
It's a pleasure meeting you last year at the Enshrinement, too.
Oh, we met last year, huh? Which night? Where were you?
It was induction Saturday with Joe Thomas.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there were a heck of a lot of Browns fans around there last year. That's for darn sure. All right. So you want to play the win loss game still anyway?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
Hopefully this serves as my Paxlovid. You want to play it for which team?
Cleveland Browns. I don't know.
Okay. Why not?
Done it yet, but.
I don't know. I don't have my notes in front of me. Chris, have you seen it anywhere?
Let me go over and check your desk.
All right, Mike Del Tufo, do we have the music going? We got the music going.
Music
here we go. All right, first up, home for the Dallas Cowboys. What happens?
No offense to TJ Jefferson, but the Browns are going to steal a win from the Cowboys on.
All right. At the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Give us a win there.
2-0, home for the Giants.
Make it 3 in a row. Win
3 in a row. All right. At the Las Vegas Raiders, the Muppet Show.
tough playing out on the road. Obviously, last year we weren't so great against the Rams, so I'm going to give them a loss against the Raiders.
All right. 3-1 at Washington.
Give us a win.
4-1. Home for the they're at Philadelphia. 3 in a row on the road.
I say give us a loss. I mean,
okay. 4-2, home for the. All right, here we go. Home for Joe Burrow. What do you got?
Give us a win.
5-2, home for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens.
It's gonna be close, but give us a loss.
Okay, 5-3, home for the Chargers.
Give us a win. No offense to the Wolverine.
That's all right. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. Jim won his last trip to Ohio. Don't worry about it. 6-3 off the bye at New Orleans.
Give it the win.
7-3 home for the Steelers.
Big win again. No matter.
Big win. Rush eight
or Justin Fields.
8-3 at Denver.
Lost.
8-4. You threw a curve there. 8-4 at Pittsburgh.
Give me another first game, Rich. It's gonna be a loss.
8-5, home for Kansas City.
Another loss. I mean, hate to say it.
8-6 at the Cincinnati Bengals.
Turn around, give us a win.
9-6, home for the Miami Dolphins.
Give us a win on that one Sunday night.
10-6 at Baltimore to wrap it up.
Give us a win there.
Okay. 11-6. Thank you for Jake in Ohio. I'll see you in Canton next week.
Yep, thank you, Rich.
All right, 11-6 for Jake. Rich, I just went and got the booklet. Tom and Canton had the Browns 10-7.
Oof. 10-7, 11-6. I mean, a 3-game losing streak to start December would send a
a bit of a tailspin going through that area. That's for sure. At Denver, at he's got them sweeping Cincinnati.
Ooh.
Splitting with Pittsburgh, 11-6. I liked hearing that Stefanski wants to call the plays. With all due respect to
I like that.
And Ken Dorsey. Yeah. I mean, that's why he's You know, this is the day and age of HCs calling plays. So let's
agreed.
Go.
Agreed.
I kind of dig that. And I've got a top five list of comeback players of the year. One of them is a Cleveland Brown. So stay tuned for that. Hour two, it's a What's More Likely Friday as well. Billy Magnuson, the actor, in hour three. Still here, everybody. Still I just here. Love it. Fans are like, they still want to play the win-loss
yeah.
game. So
let's keep going, man.
Yeah, that's since they've got two Thursday nights, by the way.
People done the Rams.
Yeah. By the way, this is my first look, like looking at Rich's book and how so you literally have it on their page down the line. And so a couple of them only have one. I don't know if we can see how the writing is here.
Oh, Rich, that's...
But like, that we've had five Bears go. Like, I'm just saying you're running out of space on some of the teams.
I know.
Because we're getting so many.
For some of the teams, it's like a 13-inning game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, you're running out of lines.
Packers.
You know what I mean?
Only one Texans, only one Colts.
If anybody still keeps score in a booklet, they'll get that reference.
Only one Saints? Come on, people.
Rich, I spent a lot of time on the bench. I know all about that.
Games don't go past 11 innings anymore anyway.
I was a scorekeeper.
Until it's the playoffs.
I still hate extra innings how it is now. It's so dumb.
Yeah, the Ghost Runner still, but you know, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to have a 15, 17, no, 19 inning game in the middle of June? Like, I can kind of understand why they're doing
it. Exactly. Me too.
I just think it's unfortunate that it shouldn't be a loss on a reliever who lets in the Ghost Runner on two outs. You know what I mean?
I don't think it is, actually. I don't think
it is not.
And I don't think it hurts their ERA as well.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
All right. That'll wrap up hour number one right here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's More Likely coming up?
April Rose here, model, actress, radio host, and content creator. But the thing I love the most, the sound of a fast car and those high revving engines, the beautiful music they put out. But of course, I dread the sound of cars crashing. I mean, you know that pedal all the way to the right, the one that turns your car into literally a rocket? Yeah, that one. Well, let's pump the brakes on that need for speed. Guys, you know speeding's illegal, but did you know it accounts for more than a quarter of all traffic-related fatalities? Speeding puts you, your loved ones, and everyone else on the road in danger. When you drive over the speed limit, even by a little bit, you can do damage that's beyond repair. I mean, the result could be costly property damage, a totaled vehicle, increased insurance premiums, or even worse, serious injury or a deadly crash. So slow it down. The sound of a fast car might seem cool, but the sounds of sirens and hospital machines simply are not. So next time you're tempted to floor it, think about the consequences. Ultimately, speeding catches up with you. Drive safe, friends. Paid for by NHTSA.